that way.
Look, there's a line of paparazzis. They are all waiting. They're behind a little gate.
Heads up behind you.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and today we spend a day in the life of Armando Cristian Perez. Yeah! But you know him as Pitbull.
All right, Maria's coming in her velour jumpsuit. This is what she picked to interview Pitbull.
My producer, Antonia Cerejido, and I spent the day with the Cuban-American rapper. We were running around Manhattan.
One block away, we need to stop so I can put on my heels, okay?
Trailing Pitbull to get a glimpse into the world of Mr. Worldwide.
Listen, I'm going where he tells me to go.
Later, I got the chance to sit down with him face to face.
Pitbull, yeah. Bienvenido a Latino USA.
In the interview, we spoke about his thoughts on President Trump, the state of immigration, and country music. And I also learned that he never misses an opportunity to throw out a saying, which in Spanish is un dicho.
And my slogan is always from a negative to a positive. Money is a passport that allows you to come and go, but it does not make you. No problems, just solutions, no? Because when you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life. Live life, don't let life live you.
At night, we caught him in concert.
And we had the time of our...
But first, we started our day with Pitbull at an event for Advertising Week.
So now you guys are face-to-face.
It's an international marketing conference, and Pitbull was going to speak on a panel about multicultural marketing. And the audience here was very aware of the very real demographic changes happening in our country.
And let's all remember, America very shortly will be 50% non-white. That's where the money is. And that's where the future is.
And that's good news for Pitbull, because he recently launched an agency called 305 Worldwide. He says it's going to help major brands tap into the Latino market. We were backstage with him just before he was going to go on stage.
Okay, good luck.
He winked at Maria.
Mr. 305 checking in for the remix. Dale! 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Pitbull is an entertainer, but he's also an entrepreneur, a motivational speaker, an educator, an investor, and there's a whole other host of epithets that follow him. But even as Pitbull's career has diversified, his image and his brand has become even more solidified. He's recognizable through his signature sunglasses. Which he even imprinted, along with his hands, in cement, in front of the Chinese Theater in Los Angeles. Also a part of his signature style is impeccably tailored suits.
So you always had your looks on point, from back there to now. Always man in the sharpest suit.
And, of course, a signature catchphrase. Pitbull first gained popularity in the early aughts with bilingual dancehall hits like Culo and Toma. But during the nearly two decades that he's been making hits, he's also become a sought-after brand ambassador and marketing expert. His net worth is estimated to be around $80 million. Now, in previous interviews, he's always said that the key to his success has been the buying power of the Latino consumer market.
We're a very powerful culture. We're a very loyal culture. That's why products want us so bad, because we're loyal consumers.
Pitbull is a man who is deeply connected to his immigrant roots and was propelled to his success by the Latino market. So it made sense that we were starting our day at Ad Week. We wanted to know how Pitbull views his role today, at a time when his Latino audience is facing greater open discrimination than at any other point during his career.
From the backstage green room, we were led to the auditorium where he would present to an audience of about 200 people. But we inadvertently caused a scene by sitting too close to the fancy cameras.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
Oh, what about, oh, we have some ruckus going on here. You guys okay? We'll just wait for you.
Once we were finally seated and calm, Pitbull was introduced with a glossy black and white video featuring highlights of his career.
Armando Christian Perez Amaya!
Mr. Worldwide, Mr. 305.
On stage, he was less hardcore business strategist and more of a motivational speaker who was sharing stories about his successes and failures. And then he told this one story about how he bungled his first big break to perform in front of thousands of people.
And I was so nervous to go on that stage. I drank a little bit of Bacardi. I chased it with some Hennessy. I chased it with some Heineken. A little bit of Corona. So when I got to that stage, you can say I was on it, but feeling good about myself. You know? In my mind, I was rapping. In my mind, I was putting words together. Like, I was like, I'm spitting fire, I'm spitting flames, I'm volcanic right now on stage. But what really was coming out of my mouth was, wah, wah, wee, wah, 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 wah. And then I would get louder because I thought I was killing it, you know? Wah, 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 yeah, wah, 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 wah. Literally, verbatim, that's what was happening on stage. So they get me on stage. I go back there. I'm going for another Heineken because I'm thinking I killed it on stage right now. I'm like, more celebration for me. And when I go get that, it's like they turned off the button on me. Boom, off button. I fell in the cooler, too. And if it wasn't for this guy named Purple Big Boy, came and picked me up, threw me in the van, I probably would have drowned in that cooler. So either or, that was my first major opportunity. And boy, talk about... But what did I do with that failure? I admitted it, I took it on, you know, but I've never been sloppy again on stage, and that was a failure that turned into an immense opportunity, and look where we're at right now.
I love it. God.
After the panel, he was quickly whisked away to his hotel, Motel Holiday Inn. No, just kidding. Actually, he was staying at the Four Seasons. So we went down to meet him there, and that's where I sat down to have a conversation. And while we spent the morning seeing the glitzy, glamorous side of Pitbull's life, I wanted to know more about where he came from. And in order to do that, we had to go back to the early 1960s, before Armando was even born. That's when his mother, Alicia Acosta, was heading from Cuba to the United States. I knew about your mom, but I did not know that your mom came as part of Peter Pan,
yeah,
which was basically unaccompanied minors.
Correct.
Who were being sent to the United States for safety because
Correct.
The revolution had occurred. I mean, your
in
mom,
Cuba, yes.
Yeah, so your mom was like in some ways historically tied to this moment where people are talking about unaccompanied children, you know, escaping, trying to find refuge.
Look, an oppressed mind is a creative mind. What do I mean by that is this. Yes, there was a lot of trials, tribulations, and struggles and sacrifices that my mother went through, and also my grandmother went through. Porque abuela, you know, to send off your daughters, it was two of them, to the United States of America, another country where they don't speak the language, they don't know the family, where they're going. All they know is that they're getting out of Cuba at that point, right? Okay? And the immigrant story is, it's a fighter's story. It's a story that really appreciates opportunity and loves freedom and will do anything for it. As we see happening right now, my mother didn't see her mother, didn't see abuela, or my grandmother, for 5 years. So imagine, 5 years without your mother or your family in a country that you don't know, a language that you don't know, and having to adapt to that. Well, that creates a survivor. That's something that my mom passed on to me. A mother's going to love their son, a mother's going to love their kid, their child, their daughter. But to teach it how to survive, that's a whole other kind of love. And that's why my life and my slogan is always from a negative to a positive.
So, tu papá
mm-hmm.
is part of Mariel, right?
Mi papá vino en lo que viene siendo como la lotería de Cuba, which comes out to be like the lottery of Cuba. When he got to Miami is when he was involved in extracurricular activities, okay, in Miami.
Yeah.
And with that, he got three boats and he went and picked up 548 people and brought them to Miami.
through El Mariel.
Your mom is basically what we know now as, quote, an unaccompanied minor, a yes. child who is seeking refuge. Mm-hmm. And your dad is basically a refugee.
On the money.
These are two things that are the centerpiece of what's happening in the United States right of now. America right now.
Right now. And look, to me, what's crazy is that the United States of America was built on immigrants. Okay? If we're looking at history and we're breaking this down technically, really the only Americans are Native Americans. All right? This is their land. Technically, if you're talking about a border in Mexico, Mexico didn't cross the border crossed them. And when you really break this down, people need to, before judging, before being opinionated, before being fearful, before being scared, before being stereotypical, you know, understand that everybody in this country at this point throughout generations had the same dream, had the same struggle, same sacrifice, same fight, same story. But now it's easier to pin people against each other because that's how you, what do? You divide and conquer.
Tu mamá y tu papá, ¿cómo se conocen? You've told this. How do your mom and dad meet?
My father was involved in extracurricular activities. When I say that, you know, he was in the streets and making ends meet. When cocaine was the commodity, the product, okay? Which, to be honest with you, is no different from what these pharmaceutical companies do right now. The only thing is that they run a commercial and they give you what the side effects are going to be. So imagine you being on the block and someone's coming to cop cocaine and you go, hey, look, you're going to get high. You're going to get addicted. But the side effects are you might start robbing people, might killing people, you might be robbing your family. And, you know, you're giving them all the side effects and they say, okay, now it's perfectly legal. You understand me? Because that's the opioid crisis right now.
You, I think that you were deconstructing this as you were watching this because of your Cuban-American experience. Cubans have these highly analytical minds that are deconstructing, because of its own reality, the political economy of the United States of America.
Ironically, if you break down Armando Cristian Perez, technically, I'm Cuban-American, so I'm already politically incorrect. Okay?
Because being Cuba a Cuban and the United States eternally hate each other. You know, Cuba is the country that stood up to the United States.
Correct.
And so being Cuban-American, you're like, this doesn't...
Yeah, they had the embargo, that you couldn't fly over Cuba, you couldn't... Anything with the United States... Nothing could go down with Cuba. At a certain time, they did help each other out. I'm talking about in the early 1900s. But so me being politically incorrect, my father surviving, hustling, trying to make ends meet, gets into the game. My mother surviving, hustling, she happened to be working at what they call as a topless bar, you know, basically like a strip club at that time. That's where they met. But my father fell in love with my mom right there and told her, get your clothes, you're getting out of here. And from then on, that never happened.
You mean like that Hollywood story?
Basically. Yeah.
Come on. I mean, I'm like, it never happened.
I swear to God. What's crazy is they also picked me because my mother had her fallopian tubes tied and she had already had two kids. He had three kids already. And they were at the spot in Miami called Watson Island. And in Watson Island, my father picked a star and said, that's going to be our son one day. And then my mother went, untied the knot, basically. And then they looked for me. And it was the first thing that they ever looked for in life. Well, because they were living in chaos, correct? You know, these are things that I don't really mention like that, but I might as well put them out there now. But, you know, my mother was fighting sexual abuse. She was raped on the way coming over from Cuba. She was sexually abused over here in this country when she came over. There was drug addiction. There's all these things to fight these demons at the time. And then my father, he was fighting his demons coming over from Cuba and not knowing. He couldn't read. My mother was the one that put him in to get a GED at the time. Like, well, you got to learn how to do this. So they motivated each other in their own. It was organized chaos, I guess. There was a method to the madness. Mm. My mother, I went on to get numerous degrees. She's the one that programmed my mind to look at life the way that I look at it. I like to say God closes a door to open a window. That's how I look at life.
So your mom was not dancing when you were around?
No. That's how they met.
But you understood... I'm trying to make the connection between you kind of understanding the work that your mom was doing, literalmente por cada dólar,
sí.
You know, dancing for mm-hmm. every dollar, and how you kind of see the importance of working for that dollar.
With my mom and everything that she went through, hard work was always instilled, but you also had abuela that was stripped of her professional job in Cuba when she came over to the States, you know, 5 years later, and they met in New Jersey again, my mother. They started working in a factory. And my grandmother didn't know how to sew or nothing like that. And that became her business. So from the factory, she went on, you know, years later to become a manager at Lord & Taylor of her department. And that's basically how she started to save money. In that, they bought a house in Miami on the 12th and H Street, La 12 y la Calle 8. And my grandmother, why she's so important to me is because I call her, you know, I call her Plan Z.
Ay, cuenta.
Mm-hmm. So the reason I call her Plan Z is because Plan Z, no matter if we got evicted, no food, water, electricity, whatever it may be, you could always count on Abuela. She had a roof. You could sleep on the floor. You could sleep on a couch. Whatever it may be, you had a place to take a shower. You had food. So it always stayed in my mind. So by 5, 6 years old, my number one objective in life was never money. And it's still not money. It was stability, security, protection. That's all I want.
You talk a lot about your love of women, being raised by women. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, 2 years after Chris Brown abused Rihanna, you collaborated on a song with him.
Yeah.
In 2013, he was accused of assaulting a woman in San Diego in a nightclub. And you released another track with him in 2014. So the question is, how is that showing respect for women if you're collaborating with somebody who has come under this kind of...
Okay. And I'll give you this much. See, I relate to Chris Brown. And what I mean by that, I've never put my hands on a woman, but I've grown up around violence. That happened to Chris because clearly something happened to him. He was either abused or grew up around it. And our environments, they're not pretty environments. Our environments are the ones people don't want to talk about. You see all the school shootings and what everybody speaks about? That happens every weekend in Miami in a certain neighborhood. We don't talk about that neighborhood, do we? You understand me? So the life that we come from is the life that people don't want to touch. What Chris Brown did was completely wrong. Completely wrong, okay? But I don't know what Chris Brown's been through in his life, but clearly there's some kind of trauma there one way or another. And Tony Robbins has a great saying, trade expectation for appreciation. And people are running around here expecting things from other people. Accept who those people are and then help. But if you expect them to be a certain way just because they're at a certain level in their life or they're a public figure, well, I don't think you're doing right by that person because that person didn't sign up to be perfect. That person signed up to be a singer, to be an artist, to be an entertainer. We're the ones that try to make them perfect, like what happened to Britney. Oh, you know, it's like they want to take you all the way up to just yank you all the way down. The reason that I get passionate about this is that's exactly why I'm getting with these major companies and trying to direct the message of like, look, you really want to tap into us? We come with, a lot of us come with a lot of baggage. You know, a lot of us come with a lot of luggage. A lot of us come with a lot of trauma. But it's not because we're like that. It's just the cards that we were dealt. And for me, I want to teach everybody out there, hey, man, I want to teach you how to handle the cards that you were dealt, and then I want to teach you how to own the casino. So therefore, we're the ones dealing the hand at this point.
Coming up on Latino USA, we go from the personal to the political.
And at the end of the day, the people that can pass these laws are really puppets to major companies.
My conversation with Pitbull continues. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Hi there, I'm Felix Contreras, host of NPR Music's Alt Latino podcast. Every fall, many people around the country celebrate Latino Heritage Month. And while we like to say every month is a Heritage Month in our program, we still like to do something extra special. Intrigued? Listen and subscribe to Alt Latino from NPR and join the fun.
Back. When Armando Cristian Perez became the rapper Pitbull, he was finding inspiration in the streets of Miami, where he heard Latin and Caribbean music. But he was also being influenced by a hip-hop scene that was emerging out of the South called crunk.
Pitbull's music would and continues to be inspired by other genres. I wanted to learn a little bit more about how his time outside of Miami has influenced his music. You actually talk a lot about your experience in the American South.
South, yeah.
And it's a part of the country that, you know, is experiencing the most demographic change intensely than any other region mm-hmm. in the United States. And I think it's very interesting that you kind of tapped into this, your song, which was 2013 Timber, right? Mm-hmm. And now you have a new country song on your new album
yeah.
that's just come out. You know, people always say, well, that's, you know, country music, it's people, it's white people who listen to that.
Oh, no, so, that's wrong.
What's your interpretation of the, you know, the truly
so
under a multicultural, like, other side?
Okay, definitely. As far as Miami being the farthest thing south, right? But I always say Miami's the most industrial city below the Mason-Dixon. Okay, so New York is the Big Apple. Miami's the pineapple. Because we're a part of all of Latin America, the Caribbean, West Indies, Europe. We have a little bit of everything in Miami. So we get a chance to see, even though we've had our racial riots, a lot of things have happened in Miami. It has a lot of history. But that's what allowed me to adapt to any environment because I grew up around so many different people. Now, the Deep South, that's different. Like, even when you go from Dade County to Broward County, you see a significant change, all right? If you're taking a trip up Florida in a car with Dade County plates, I can almost guarantee you're going to get pulled over, okay? That's just the way it works.
Dade County signifies Latinos.
Dade County is 305 Miami, and it signifies a melting pot. Yes, majority son los Latinos que están ahí, muchos cubanos. But it's also known for, if they're looking at Dade County, they think that you're moving something one way or another. You're up to something, okay? Now, why did I get involved with the country movement? For one, I love the record from Avicii, may he rest in paradise. Yeah, don't wake me up with Aloe Black. So wake me up when it's all over. And he was performing at Ultra, which is a big DJ event in Miami, and they booed him on that record. And it had an amazing part in the beginning that I was like, I love the way he flipped country with EDM. Became the biggest record in the world. So when I got the Timber beat, I was like, oh, this could follow the Avicii record. This is great. It's going down. I'm yelling timber. You better move. You better dance. So therefore, Timber explodes, becomes a number one record all around the world. It is what it is. You won't forget it. I'm doing a show with Blake Shelton in Oregon. And I'm doing the show in the middle of nowhere. 20,000 people, 5,000 people waiting outside. 60% of this show, Mexicans. Blake Shelton, 60% of the Mexicans.
Uh-huh.
So when I jump on stage and I say, para todos los latinos allá afuera, and he said, we've been loco y locas. Ah! Blake was like, cool. What the hell? You know, what's going on?
So he didn't even realize.
So then I perform and Blake was like, hey. Then after we spoke in his trailer, and he was like, hey, man, this really works. You know, we may be able to do something here. A little dog runs up on me. When the dog runs up on me in his trailer, I'm like, you know, petting the dog and asking, well, what's the name of the dog? He said, Black Betty. Oh, okay. When I leave the trailer, I get on the plane, mind you, on the plane, working again. Because when you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life. I'm on the plane, I tell DJ Chino, I said, Chino, don't we got a record called Black Betty? He said, yeah. From 2014, I was sitting on this record.
Whoa.
Ah, so we flipped it from Black Betty to Oh, Get Ready. Whoa, get ready, bam-a-lam. Whoa, get ready, bam-a-lam. Because that's for everybody. You know, and we can make it Oh, Get Ready about women getting ready to go to the club or getting ready to go to work or getting ready for, you know, an exam, getting ready for that. I'm like, man, that's an amazing idea. So that's how it became Oh, Get Ready, bam-a-lam. No, get ready, bam-a-lam. And to me, that's going to be the biggest record off this album. And no longer is the goal to have hit records. I don't care about that. It's to have timeless records. Big difference. Put your hands up. Now say, whoa, get ready, bam-a-lam. Whoa, get ready, bam-a-lam. Whoa, get ready, bam-a-lam. Get ready.
seriously, Armando, this morning, because I went to teach at the university before I came to see you, etc. Mm-hmm. So at 6:30 in the morning, I'm prepping, you know, and so I've got you in my ear.
Then you
got
to, oh, get ready.
No, bam, it's the, every single song, you know, on Spotify, just listen to Pitbull, every single one. I'm like, I know. Oh, my God. I'm like,
no, thank you. I appreciate it. No wonder you're so happy today. Look at you, girl.
No, seriously.
That's why you run around every day happy.
No, pero de verdad. Like, seriously, which makes me think about, okay, there is something. I am very blessed to have been to Cuba many times. And when you're there, there is something that is like, es algo muy cubano. And I feel like in a lot of ways that you have that, this kind of like...
Le dicen chispa.
Una chispa, pero también es una sensualidad. There's mm-hmm. a sensuality. There's a whole kind of undertone that is a rhythm.
A lot of double meanings, you know.
A lot of double meanings. I was walking along Columbia University campus listening to Taxi.
Me la conocí en un taxi. That's a great double meaning too.
Pero por favor. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was like blushing. I was like, you know, I was like screaming and blushing. Yo la conocí en un
taxi. That was a real story. A friend of mine that happened to him in Cuba.
Okay, I believe it.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of double entendres
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. The city I grew up in is a very sexual city. The culture that I'm from is a very, like you were saying, sensual. You know, we were booty shaking in the cafeteria. We were dancing in ways that the whole world just got onto maybe 10 years ago. You know, like when they said Miley Cyrus was twerking, I said, twerking? God bless her, but they've been doing that since I was in third grade, you know? But that's the city that I grew up in. But Cuba's very sexual also. Music has been an escape for me, an amazing but therapeutic way of being able to look at life.
Tell me then, Armando, how are you processing what we're living through in this moment? You know, sometimes
it's
I wake up and I'm like, there are 2-year-olds in a cage without their mother.
It's crazy.
How are you processing this and how are you kind of internalizing this moment as an artist, as a human being?
Look, my mother told me all the time, she says, son, the world's always been coming to an end. Meaning, just live life. Live life, don't let life live you. So as I'm processing everything that's going on, what I like real solutions. I like to know what the problem is, where's the nucleus, and how are we going to solve this? So if you notice, when it comes to a lot of things that go on in the world, and people like to go, oh, because I donated this, and oh, because I did that, God bless, de verdad. But do it for real. Don't do it for the media. Don't do it to act like you're doing something that you wouldn't do when nobody was looking. So with immigration and what's going on with these kids, I have to take a bird's eye view because I relate through what's happened in my family to find what the real solution is. Who's going to make a real change here at the end of the day? And it's coming together. Do I have the solution right now? No, I don't. I don't. Because it's become such a touchy subject in the United States of America when you speak about immigrants, especially. And you know what's crazy to me? They did a raid in whether it was Mississippi. And when they did this raid, they took people out of their jobs. They were working. They weren't on the block hustling. They weren't out here flipping kilos. They weren't out here, you know, raping and drug dealing. No, they were working. Working probably under another name, still paying taxes one way or another, trying to figure this out as they become citizens of the United States of America. I go back, working. That bothered me. That's not America. That's not the America. That's not the Constitution. That's not the Declaration of Independence. That's not the preamble. It's not. But you know what's crazy? When they started taking those, a majority were Mexicans in Alabama, they started fleeing to like Texas, to other places that they could find work. You know what was the hit economically that Alabama took when those Mexicans left? Because no one else wanted to take the job that they were doing. And mind you, the jobs that feed us, the jobs that you guys wouldn't, there wouldn't be no lettuce, no strawberries, no tomatoes, no nothing if it wasn't for people doing jobs that no one else would take on. And we're turning them back and we're treating them like dogs, like it's crazy to me. So as obviously you see that I get passionate about
you know,
this.
I was just thinking, I don't think I've ever seen Armando pissed off.
Mm. You don't want to be honest with you.
I know.
I've learned
to become watching
a domesticated
you now, and
animal.
You're getting, this is like you are angry about this.
I mean, yes, I am. And you know what really bothers me is that the solution is a hop, skip, and a jump on the way. And I'm just trying to figure out strategically how to get there.
because it's chess, not checkers. And this has all become a political game. Politics have become the WWF now. You know, it's like wrestlers going at each other, talking, which is the wrestlers, that's their business. That's what they're supposed to do. But politicians are supposed to be the ultimate example of society. And now you got everybody going at each other like if they're on the corner talking, like if they're at a barbershop going at each other, you know? When you have a heart, when you look at things and go, man, what if that was my child? What if that was my kid? You don't even want to know the kind of things I'd do if that was my kid, to be honest with you. And that's why I get so revved up about it because it's so hot. Like we say in Miami, 38 hot, you know? It's because, man, there's a solution to this. And you guys are using this as a pawn in this chess match of politics that you guys got going on. And that's why politics, I call it politrix. That's exactly what it is. And at the end of the day, the people that can pass these laws are really puppets to major companies. And the reason they don't pass these laws because then they feel they may not get their money for their next campaign, or they might not, you know, get voted back into their district or their state or into Congress, into their seat, or, you know, it's disgusting, to be honest with you. You know, we are treating people that are only coming here that generations in your family were looking for. Matter of fact, when you look at the president's family, they were immigrants.
You're talking about Trump?
Okay, they were immigrants. Yeah, Trump's family.
You don't like him?
It's not about whether I like him or not. I don't respect him. You get what I mean? That's it. When you could treat people like that, then I can just imagine. And mind you, I've met him.
Well, I mean,
I've met him before. And
I mean, you're like as famous as somebody who understands kind of branding, you know, owning your, and you're like looking at him. It's like, I feel like you can almost understand.
Yeah, I don't respect what he's become, you know, and before he became president, he had an interesting story. Okay. But I guess that being president really shed light on who this person really is at the end of the day, you know, and when you have that kind of power to be able to help people and you're not. Because the whole point of Trump being in office is because he's really not a politician. He's more like supposedly a businessman. Mind you, the guy went bankrupt and only got a minor loan from his father. I mean, man, I didn't even get a penny from my family. I got bills from cable companies, electric companies, all them, you know, bills under my name because, you know, they had already burnt the account. So, but either or, this is a country that was built by immigrants and look what we're doing to immigrants. You have a president, his wife is an immigrant, which, by the way, has amazing style. Okay, I love to watch her and go, oh, wow. I like the way you put yourself together. I don't know if she's too happy next to him, but, oh, yeah, that's a whole nother. But, and comes from a family of immigrants who lived the American dream and put him in the position for him to be able to do what he's doing now. Now, if you ever, ever think that the United States of America is not a place that you could become anything you possibly want to, and anybody can become anything, let me flip Trump on you. Donald Trump became the president of the United States of America. Okay? That's the double-edged sword here, folks. Question is, are you going to do it for the good, or are you going to do it for personal interest? Big difference.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity. Latinos pa'lante, pa'arriba siempre, porque no hay más nada. It's Mr. 305, but it's Mr. Worldwide. Checking in, checking out. Y ya tú sabes. Dale.
We parted ways with Pitbull. There were about 25 executives waiting to speak with him as soon as we finished. Later, we met up with him when we saw him on stage at Webster Hall. He emerged wearing an all-black suit to a screaming crowd, and of course, he was surrounded by beautiful, sexy, scantily clad dancers. He kept on dropping wisdom.
Now, if you got any haters that run up on you, first of all, you tell them, thank you very much, I appreciate you, because we all need haters in our life. That means we're doing something right.
And of course, he brought the party. Our thanks to Armando Cristian Perez, better known as Pitbull, for spending the day with us. His latest and 11th album, Libertad 548, is out now.
This episode was produced by Antonia Cerejido with help from Fernanda Uriegas and edited by Fernanda Camarena. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Palizaca, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamuka, and Alisa Escarce. We had help this week from Ginny Montalvo and Maya Cueva. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our digital team includes Julio Ricardo Varela and Amanda Alcantara. Our interns are Juan Diego Ramirez and Adriana Tapia. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure to stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, you can find us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. And the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
Y me dio mucha pena when my father had to hear the word culo.
Pero le gustó.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. Every year, the United States celebrates Columbus Day, but many cities and states are opting out. The growing movement behind Indigenous Peoples Day.
Indigenous Peoples Day just really opens up this opportunity for conversations, and the rest of the time, we don't think about Native people.
That's next time on Latino USA.